The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the simplest, most powerful website creator that helps you make headlines with your own stunning online presence. Explore elegant templates, Getty image integration, and more at squarespace.com and use the code Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello and welcome to Football Weekly Extra. On today's pod, we analyse Bayern's brilliance, Real finally beating Atletico, Barcelona still being good, and the sad realisation that Gigi Buffon is nowhere near as old as you think he is. Also, a Premier League preview, West Ham season tickets, another Newcastle protest, we unveil the population of Falkirk, and a step-by-step guide to washing your hands. I'm Max Rushton in for James Richardson. As someone nice on the comments section wrote, it's like replacing Loic Remy for Diego Costa. Not as good, but can still do a decent job. Or as Dara Solon writes, Max is not suitable. I mean, replacing Jimbo is an impossible task, but anyway, Max is not the answer. Even worse is that I have dragged Barry Glendenning down with me. Bring back the backlash, writes Barry, is an insufferable oaf at the best of times. But when he's on with his BFF Rushton, it is unlistenable. Barry's here again. Hi, Barry.
Hello.
BFFs.
For Evs.
It's exciting, isn't it?
We're not BFFs because you didn't invite me to a recent dinner party you had in your house.
This is the kind of conversation that BFFs have.
Okay. Sorry, I'll stop.
I think it's important, Jacob. Jacob Steinberg is here. How are you?
Hi.
That you cut down. I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah.
Like you shoot down any, if it ever encroaches.
Right, okay.
On BFF-ness.
Right, if that's the edging word. Towards that territory, then me and... The guy, I won't introduce him.
No, you feel welcome to.
No, that's your job.
Okay. I deliberately stayed out of the toilet discussion in the last podcast.
But the damage had been done by then.
Apparently so.
Also with us is Mr. Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
How are you, Ian?
I'm very well, thank you.
And what have you been up to? Outside sorting something out. I was trying to get some work.
Secret dealings in the corridors of Guardian Towers. I've been all over the place recently. I've been in Manchester. I've been in Hartlepool, which is an extraordinary place. I've been in Liverpool twice. Oh, all the things I have done.
Jacob, where have you been recently?
Bournemouth.
Okay.
Yeah. Went to Bournemouth. That was fun.
Oh, well, good. Well, look, in part one, we'll talk about the Champions League, and we'll do that right now. Welcome to part one. We'll cross to Sid in a moment to talk Spain. Let's start with the performance of the week. While the pod comfortably predicted that Porto would squeeze through, Pep had other ideas, blowing them aside in an incredible first half and finally winning 6-1. We all watched this. Jacob, did you see this coming?
I thought that if they got an early goal, then it could become quite a difficult night for Porto. If it went on and on without them scoring the first goal, then you could maybe see the frustration growing, the way that Pep Guardiola's sides do play of keeping the ball and a lot of possession, which sometimes there isn't the cutting edge that's been on minimal occasions his downfall in the Champions League, probably against Inter and Chelsea when Barcelona went out. But they came out so quickly, and as soon as they created that first chance when Lewandowski hit the post, you feared for Porto, and they were just outstanding in the first half. It was one of the best performances of the last few years, probably in the Champions League. That third goal was one of the best goals I've seen for a long time. The touch from Müller, the cross from Lahm, who was incredible down the right flank. And they've just overwhelmed Porto, who really missed the two fullbacks who were missing on Tuesday night. That really hurt them.
Ian?
Yeah, the way that Bayern kept smashing the ball from one side of the pitch to the other, switching the play so quickly, like Jacob says, Porto, without their first-choice fullbacks, they didn't know what was going on. They were absolutely baffled by it all. It was all so quick and so intense, which was something of a surprise to me, because when I was listening to the build-up on the radio, someone was suggesting that this could be the night when Pep Guardiola was found out, which was a kind of alarming concept. I mean, how many things do you have to win before you get past the point of having to prove yourself?
But it's true, there almost felt like there was a lot of pressure on Pep.
Yeah.
With losing the first leg and the doctor
the
resigning.
The doctor, yeah. And then it turns out, no, he is actually quite good at this.
How bad were Porto, though? I mean, what do we put this down to?
You know, you have to put it into context of just how good Bayern Munich were. And although they were excellent in the first leg, but I think Thomas Müller said, we were impressed by them in the first leg, but we showed what we can do at home at the Allianz Arena. It was one of the best Bayern Munich performances in Europe probably since, you take into account the win over Roma when they won 7-1 in November, but also probably since Jupp Heynckes was there and they beat Barcelona 4-0. It was probably the outstanding performance from that side. And yeah, suddenly from last week when it was in crisis, now everyone's saying they're going to win the tournament.
And that's the media in a nutshell, isn't it? Just sensationalising everything.
I've got to say, in defence of Porto, though, they gave a very good account of themselves for the first 3 or 4 minutes. You know, Jackson Martinez was coming back all the way from up front to help out. And
well, when they got
I thought,
goal,
oh, they might do this.
When they got the goal, they have one chance where Martinez actually almost scored again. And then they would have only needed another goal to go through. So there were a couple of bit of nervy moments for Bayern towards the end. And then Porto got a guy sent off and Xabi Alonso stuck one in the top corner and that was it. But maybe there are little bits of vulnerabilities you could still see to Bayern.
But they're missing Bayern, missing players as well. I mean, yeah, say Porto are missing players. But
I think probably a lot of people looked at the Bayern team on when it came out on Tuesday night and saw no Robben, no Ribery, Schweinsteiger on the bench, no Alaba, and thought, how are they going to do this? And it turned out that Pep actually tends to have quite a few plans up his sleeves. And instead of playing what we would have expected, it was kind of a 4-4-2 with them bombing down the wings and Müller through the middle. Thomas Müller, who's no one could quite work out what he's good at, but he's good at everything without being really good at anything.
And celebrating with a loud hailer at the end, which
it's just one of the most enjoyable footballers.
It is worth mentioning that they were a little fortunate by not to be down to 10 men. I know they were probably still smacked Porto all over the place with 10 men, but Bad Stuber looking like a kid in an invisible sledge in that tackle, both feet up, straight in at the ankles. I'm not entirely sure how he wasn't sent off for that.
It was 5-0 at that point.
Yeah. I felt on balance. Still, you're right. It was probably going to be fine.
It was definitely two-footed. He was out of control, wasn't
he? Very much out of control.
Barry, you didn't see the game. Did you see Pep trousers splitting?
I am aware that his trousers split. I'm not sure what happened. Did he sort of bend over and
Villas-Boas style on the haunches?
The side.
Tailoring. I'd have expected better from
or Pep. Stress eating.
Possibly. You
know, he doesn't eat before a game though. Pep, it takes him till about midnight to eat.
But he doesn't eat for the whole day.
Have you read the Pep Confidential book by Marty Perenau? It goes into quite a lot of detail about how manic he is on a match day.
Do we know how much he eats the day before?
it's like Yom Kippur for a
Jew.
I'd just feel terribly faint if I didn't eat all day. Did you see how the Daily Mail online reacted to Pep's trouser splitting?
Did it go onto the sidebar of shame?
The headline is, as Pep Guardiola's trousers split, men guilty of wearing too snug suits revealed.
What?
Yes, other famous men who wear trousers that are too tight.
Right.
There are three. Who's guilty of worshipping at the altar of super tight slacks? Does anybody want to guess?
Jamie Redknapp.
Shearer. Not sporting.
Ugh. I'm out then. I don't know anything.
Two good guesses.
It could be anybody.
You want to have a
Kyle
guess?
Kyle Jenner.
John Bon Jovi, circa 1985.
It says here, Russell Brand, guilty. Dermot O'Leary, guilty. Ollie Mears, in danger of restricting the blood flow.
There we are. Sports website of the year, that was.
Was it?
Yeah, last year.
I think they took the story on, didn't they? Which is obviously the job of the Monday reporter, is to look at a different angle. And other people who wear tight trousers, very good. But so where do we put Bayern on the list of favourites and who's going to win this?
Probably, I think in the odds they're second favourites behind Barcelona. So, and then Madrid third, and Juve, unfortunately, a distant fourth.
Yeah, Juve only 8-1. We should congratulate them before we go on to Spain. They won 1-0 on aggregate against Monaco. Buffon is only 37. And I watched, the sort of highlights and thought, oh, isn't that so great that a 45-year-old is doing so well? He just looks incredibly old.
I can't really remember a time when he wasn't around.
You can't remember a time that he wasn't old either.
Well, he made his debut when he was 16, I think, didn't he?
I suppose that might explain it.
And that's a long time ago.
Yeah, 21 years ago. So nobody thinks Juve have a chance. I mean, they're doing very well in Serie A, aren't they? 15 points clear. Done some research. That's the end of it.
Where else?
Well, no, of course they have a chance, but it's difficult to see beyond the big three, you know. I've seen people on Twitter sort of arguing over whether it's a good or a bad thing that, you know, teams Barcelona, Real and Bayern, you know, it's sort of the super rich clubs rising to the top, with the exception of Manchester City, obviously. So Juve are way down the list. I mean, they're still top 10 in the world's richest clubs. I'm not sure if it's world's or Europe's, but it would be Europe's.
It's a cup competition, isn't it? I mean, Chelsea won this in 2012 and they were crap. Liverpool won it in 2005 and they were crap. You're talking about three games where you've got to be disciplined and a little bit of luck going in your favour, and there's no reason why Juve can't do it. I'm not suggesting for a moment Juve are crap, but it's not like Malmo have suddenly made it or anything.
Well, let's talk about Spain, and the man we should talk to is Sid Lowe, who is in Spain. Sid, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Let's start with the game last night then, Real Atletico. First win in 8 attempts. I thought the first leg was great, and I thought that yesterday was pretty boring, if I'm honest.
I'm a little bit surprised that you thought the first leg was great. It was better than the second, but I didn't think it was that exciting. They were both very, very close. I think there's lots of things that have changed, obviously, for Real Madrid to have changed this run of 7 games without winning. I think for the first time in that run of 7 games, they probably deserve to win the first leg, because one of the things that's happened in this run in which Atletico have been unbeaten is that it hasn't been fluke. It hasn't been them kind of somehow clinging on and finding a way through. They've probably been largely the better side over those 7 games, but not over these 2 legs. I thought in the end the truth is that Atletico just didn't do enough, and it was, as you say, not hugely exciting. Intense though.
Yeah, intense. Pleased for Hernandez, I think, because he's not really had an opportunity at Real, has he?
No, and Ancelotti's pleased for him as well. Also, he said last night, he said that, you know, this is a guy who's played very, very little. I think I'm right in saying this. I haven't got the stat in front of me, but I think this was only his 7th start. I think it was only his 3rd in the Champions League, and 2 of those against Ludogorets, you know, games that sort of didn't matter. His goal scoring record is actually very good. I think that's 6 goals in less than 900 minutes of football. And he was very lively last night. Admittedly, he'd had a couple of very good chances before that that he hadn't been able to take, but I thought his movement was quite good. I thought he offered Real Madrid a way of keeping possession higher up the pitch and bringing other people into the game, which was good. And you know, the seeing him after the game as well, coming through the mix zone, he was the last to leave the stadium by a long, long way. I mean, everybody had gone, all the other players had gone. It was completely empty. It was nearly 1 o'clock in the morning. And he was there kind of, I was going to say patiently, talking to every radio station in Spain, one after the other, but I suppose it wasn't so much patient as him enjoying his moment.
Perfect. Barcelona reached the semis for the 7th time in 8 seasons. It was all seemed very easy for them.
Yeah, disappointingly easy in a way. I thought Paris Saint-Germain were really quite poor. Now, of course, the second leg is conditioned by the first, in which they're missing, I think it was 3 or 4 normal starters. And Laurent Blanc afterwards, and this was a question I asked him, I said, you know, he said before the game that they need, they're not yet a team that's fully finished off, they're a team still in construction and so on. I said, well, yeah, but what do you think you need to become that team? And you talk about patience, but do you think that given the money that's been spent, there will be patience? And then he came out and said, you know, patience is really, really important. The money doesn't matter. Look how many players Barcelona have got, so on. But Barcelona, while he would be absolutely right to say that, of course, they're consolidated, and you look at the squad and there's a significant proportion of them that have come through at the club that have been there for a long time. Barcelona are kind of in a transitional year as well. And I don't know whether what French football fans or French football journalists think of this, but it feels to me like Paris Saint-Germain were actually a bit disappointing. But then there's also that other side to it, which is that a really good team makes other good teams look bad sometimes, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they are. And I thought Barcelona were excellent in both games.
Did Ibrahimovic have a nice time going back?
Well, he got a little bit of whistling, which was pretty much for much of the game the only reason you realised he was on the pitch. You know, I thought he did, and then he scored a goal that was well offside. I suspect he probably didn't enjoy it very much. And there was a very, very uncomplimentary article in El País today of the game, just describing him as a serial loser. which for a guy who won, was it, 8 league titles in a row, I thought was perhaps a little bit harsh.
And has there been any excitable reaction in Spain to Pep? Disaster 1 week and then hero the next?
Yeah, it's worth giving you the context on this. Since Guardiola left and since Mourinho left, they left... what's the best word? They left sides behind. They left a battle behind in Spain. So there's an interest in Bayern Munich and an interest in Chelsea from the point of view of those who are desperate to say, you see, I told you he was a genius, and a point of view of those who are desperate to say, see, I told you he was a myth. And so whenever Chelsea lose, you get loads of people wading into Mourinho here saying, see, he's a joke, he's rubbish, he's not very good, and all this stuff. When Barcelona lost the first game to Porto, when Bayern Munich lost the first game to Porto, lots of people waded it on Guardiola. He's a myth, he's rubbish, look at him, he's been completely done over by Lopetegui, who obviously on top of everything else is Spanish, so that's even more pleasing for some of them. And there he is, he's not that good. Then of course he wins the second leg and it's the other side's chance to have a go. So yeah, there's always a lot of fascination with both Guardiola and with Mourinho. And of course, Guardiola could now come back to Barcelona, which has a political significance as well, because there's a divide within Barcelona fans. Well, yeah, within fans, but I think more importantly, there's kind of a political divide at Barcelona, particularly between people who more or less represent the current board and the previous one with Sandro Rosé, and people who represent what you could broadly speaking call the opposition to that, those who would support the previous president, Joan Laporta. And Guardiola is one of the battlegrounds of that kind of almost ideological argument. And so... It's possible that it could get really nasty. One particular media group led by El Mundo Deportivo, one of the Catalan dailies, whose bitterness towards Guardiola, considering what he achieved at Barcelona, is absolutely bizarre. And I suspect it might get a little bit nasty if Bayern play Barca next.
Well, good luck. Sorry, Barry just sneezed and phlegmed across the gardening podcast that's on after us. We ought to grow something in that.
It's your lung. Did you just head in your lung up on the carpet?
Head in your hands, Barry. Sid, thanks for your time. Greatly appreciated.
Oh, dear. I've just been completely upstaged by a snot.
Sorry.
That was quite incredible. I'm glad you went that way. Otherwise, Ian was in a lot of trouble. That was part one. In part two, after the clear-up, the Premier League, the best league in the world.
Guardian listeners get the latest news, but they can also create it. With our sponsor Squarespace, you can easily create an elegant website for your personal brand, online store, business, personal portfolio, or blog. Whoever you are, Squarespace's simple tools and elegant designs make your ideas newsworthy and accessible to any audience. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Welcome to part two. Let's look ahead to the Premier League weekend. Barry, you're right.
Yes, I'm fine, thank you.
Yes, good. Right, Arsenal-Chelsea on Sunday. Chelsea need 8 points to win the league. And Arsenal are doing very well at the moment. 9 wins in a row in all competitions for Arsene Wenger. And a win means that Chelsea's lead will be down to 7. Can Arsenal do it?
Can they beat them?
Can they beat Chelsea, not can they win the league?
Well, Arsene Wenger has never beaten Jose Mourinho, so... Based simply on those statistics, you would have to think no, and that, again, you might expect Mourinho to go there and possibly shut the game down. I don't know if you remember last season's game between Arsenal and Chelsea at the Emirates, but it was one of the more forgettable matches of the season last year.
I don't remember.
0-0, nothing happened. Mourinho decided that nothing would happen, so nothing happened. But I think that it's probably a big game psychologically for Arsenal. I don't think that they can win the league, even if they win this match. It's done. Chelsea have won the league, basically. 8 points they need.
Yeah, and actually Leicester, and then they've got
home.
4 pretty easy games after that.
Are you including Liverpool at home as an easy game?
I am, yeah.
Well, good luck to you. but I think the run that Arsenal have been on, they need possibly just to take something into next season to keep that momentum going. If they could get over that extra hurdle of beating Chelsea... beating a Mourinho side, it might do wonders for them. You maybe liken it to something like, from, you know, look at maybe tennis, another sport, of Murray winning the Olympics, beating Federer to get over that one last hurdle. A couple of months later, he wins the US Open for the first time, wins Wimbledon for the first time a year later. Sometimes you can get that extra boost from something that doesn't seem so important at the time, and it could lead you on to greater things the year to follow. It's probably a big ask, though, just for the way that the hold that Mourinho seems to have over Arsenal.
It's weird, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You'd have just thought at some point...
He has a way of shutting them down, the way that maybe other sides don't have at the moment. Arsenal, they tend to play quite well against other sides at home. In Man City, the last two times they've played them, they've given them problems. They've won at the Etihad in January. But when they play Chelsea, not a lot seems to happen for them.
Is there a case for other big sides knowing that Jose's going to do this and almost trying to come up with a new idea? Almost try and do the same and then see what happens.
The same thing would have won the title for Liverpool last season. The game which is always remembered for Gerrard's slip. If Liverpool had actually just looked at what Chelsea were doing and thought, hang on, we really only need a point here. And if they'd have sat back deep so there's no danger of getting caught on the counter-attack, they'd have won the title. But Brendan Rodgers doesn't think like that, and I don't think Arsene Wenger will think like that. I think that he'll... I mean, there's a lot to be said for an Arsenal team who don't really have anything to fear. There's not really any pressure on them right now. So you never know, but I think in this case you do. I mean, it would be extraordinary if they reined Chelsea in and won the title. It would be a electromagnetic pulse of I told you so emanating out from North London, wiping out all technology in its path and sending us back to the Stone Age. It would be astonishing. It's not going to happen, though.
I almost get that you would actually hate it to happen because of that.
No, I wouldn't hate anything to happen, and I quite like Arsene Wenger, so, you know, in a way it would be quite nice for him. But it's not going to happen. Chelsea are going to sit deep, they're going to shut the game down, and they're probably going to go and snatch something in the last 15 minutes.
Barry, agree with that?
Yep.
It's good that we're not being BFF-like today, isn't it? They've got Leicester on Wednesday, Chelsea. In many ways, that's also a... There's a possibility of Chelsea not getting all 3 points there, isn't there?
Yeah, but they probably will. They're going to get 8 points from six games, so they've won the league. You would have to say you can come back and throw this in my face if they don't in a few weeks.
And is this the main difference between Chelsea and the other sides there? That you look at teams even down to, I don't know, Spurs and six, who have dropped points just in games when they just really didn't need to drop points. And Chelsea just have a way of, however interestingly or not doing that.
Yeah, well, Chelsea just can grind. And you saw it against QPR. And you saw it when they won 1-0 in the last minute, having not played well at all, really didn't create anything in that match. And then one slip from QPR was enough to let them score. And against United as well, again, it wasn't like a performance that really to get the pulse racing at all. But they won 1-0 from one real moment of magic from Hazard and Oscar.
And there's very few elements of doubt in that Chelsea team. You look at what he's done to Hazard and the way that he actually looks after the fullback behind him now, the way that he can shut down a flank. There's very few variables that can go against Chelsea. If they really need to kill a game, you'd usually back them to do it. That said, there's been a couple of occasions this season, Burnley and Hull, where they haven't done it, and they do look very, very leggy, like they're stumbling over the line. But even so, there's enough belief, there's a solid enough structure. I can't really see anything going wrong here.
I don't think they've lost a big game against since he's come back, Mourinho, in the league.
You may very well be right.
So,
is that Spurs game count?
Against the big, you know, I think against the title, against title rivals. Against title rivals.
Barry, you were going to say something.
I actually do fancy Arsenal in this one. I just think the way Chelsea have been playing, the way Arsenal have been playing, I do think they'll beat them. They're good enough to work their way through the Chelsea defence and unlock it and score a couple of goals.
Everton, Manchester United. It does matter who comes. You know, it's sort of Arsenal, Man City and Man United are going to come in the top four, almost certainly. But it matters if you come certainly second or third compared to fourth, doesn't it? So Manchester United should go there and win.
Well, this was pretty much this time last year where they went to Everton and got completely pulverised. And it was David Moyes' last match and they've come a long way since then. You'd have to say Manchester United and probably Everton aren't quite the side they were at that time last year as well. They were going for the Champions League and now they're in mid-table. But yeah, Manchester United, it's another game for them to keep building that momentum towards next season in much the same way as Arsenal. You know, I think they probably didn't play their best stuff last week at Stamford Bridge, but the last few weeks have been been brilliant from them.
Manchester United have got their fire back, they're aggressive, they're pressing in packs. Everton are a team, despite their recent run of form, who still tit about with it outside their own penalty area. This is only going one way. This is a weak back pass or someone spending too much time on the ball and United coming in and snatching a goal.
Last week, on Monday, I tried to talk excitedly about the rebirth of Aaron Lennon and nobody wanted to join in, and it definitely didn't make the edit.
Really?
But I've just been quite impressed with how well he's played.
Yeah, he's another one who you sort of sometimes surprised by how young he is, because I think he came through, 10 years ago and he was 17. He's only 27. And if Everton could get him next season on a permanent deal, then that would be probably a great signing for them. He's faded away at Tottenham, but I'm never entirely convinced that Andros Townsend is a better option than him.
Lennon's playing with a smile on his face now, which is quite at odds with what we saw when he was having his picture taken when he first turned up.
They were superb.
They're amazing.
Just the pain and sadness.
What have I done?
Speaking of Aaron Lennon's club at the moment, Spurs, they go to Southampton. Ian, you're going. Early kickoff on Saturday.
Yeah.
Are you excited? Pochettino goes back.
I've never been to Southampton either.
It's nice.
It's very exciting, is it?
Yeah.
Are the car parking facilities good? Because I'm driving.
They are good, but you have to get there early.
Oh, I'll be leaving at the crack of dawn. Got me playlist ready. I'm all set.
And, there's a car park up the road where you can park for a fiver if you don't get into the stadium car park.
Nice. Thank you very much. This has been very useful to
West
our
Brom
listeners.
West Brom Liverpool, then.
This isn't self-indulgent at all.
Once again, it kind of... Who's it? Spurs, Southampton, Liverpool all going for fifth, sixth and seventh, which I think will all, depending on who wins the FA Cup, they will all go into the Europa League. If Villa win the Cup, then seventh doesn't. I still think you probably don't want to go into the Europa League if you're one of those three
teams. Done no favours for Tottenham. They must be, 55, 56 games through their season now? And they look it as well. This has been a very useful season for Tottenham. I didn't think they'd do this well. I thought it was going to be far more transitional than this. But Pochettino's been able to get a read on his players. He knows which ones he likes and which ones he desperately needs to flog on eBay over the summer. But they are fading now. And with Southampton, you just never know. They're still capable of picking up a result, but they also look in their hearts like they know that it's over, that they're not getting into the Champions League.
Yeah, but I think that probably Spurs were less keen on the Europa League given what it's done to them this season. But with Southampton, if you're a team that's come up from League One and through the Championship, and last summer you were told that you were going to go down because you've sold all your best players and written off by everybody, I think that they would certainly embrace it if they were to finish there. Maybe Spurs fans would look at it in a different way.
No,
at the same time, though,
right, yeah.
At the same time, the Europa League, there is a Champions League place for the winner at the end of it.
I think for a team like Southampton, who, you know, say Southampton or Swansea or Stoke, who can't realistically qualify for the Champions League, then Europa League is good. But if you're Tottenham and Liverpool fan with sort of hope or possibly delusions of getting into the top four, then it's a hindrance.
Some calls for Ronald Koeman manager of the year from other Premier League managers I heard last week. I can't remember which ones. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, he's done a great job. I think that obviously it was always going to be difficult for them to last the pace and keep up, you know, the title challenge that appeared to be blossoming in the autumn when they went into games against Arsenal, United and City, where they were second in the league, and people thought, could they maintain that? That was probably always unlikely to happen. They don't have the squad of the other sides, and certainly the top four. Palace got tired in the last few weeks, and they don't have a replacement for him. Not having Rodriguez as to come back after his knee injury yet has probably hurt them in that department. But again, people thought that they were goners in the summer, and he's done an amazing job.
I also echo those views that he's been brilliant, but it's Jose Mourinho, manager of the year for me. I mean, the man is an insufferable tit, but you look at what he's done in 2 years of taking a very unbalanced, difficult squad, probably a very difficult dressing room as well, and within FFP, while turning over a decent profit for players he's got rid of, he's just made them very, very effective, almost certain title winners. And I think you've kind of got to acknowledge that. Probably won't acknowledge
Tony Pulis will get it again.
Yeah.
West Brom play Liverpool on Saturday. Does anyone care?
We'll know a lot about the Liverpool players after this. West Brom got the win they needed last week, which has probably made them safe unless something extraordinary happens.
And they've got a tough run as well. Liverpool, then Man United, they play Newcastle, but Chelsea and Arsenal as well in their last games.
But Tony Pulis was absolutely furious in the games before that. He knew that they only needed a win. I mean, they were hosting QPR. You don't lose at home to QPR. No one loses at home to QPR. He was furious with his
players.
Sunderland, yes, Barry. That's a different matter. But what mood are the Liverpool players in from the guys who were there at Wembley going down to the mix zone trying to get interviews at the end of that? The Liverpool players weren't even stopping, heads down straight on the bus.
There were rumours about Klopp to Liverpool, amongst other rumours. Do you think it matters what happens to Liverpool in the next few games as to Brendan Rodgers' future, or do we all think he'll be here next season?
Well, qualifying for the Champions League will certainly help him. I don't think the domestic cups would have done that much. Because we know that the Americans don't really care for him. Dalglish won the League Cup and got to the final of the FA Cup, and when they sacked him, they said that it wouldn't have mattered if he'd won both Cups. They'd still have got rid of him. It's all about Champions League qualification. But that said, I think they'll probably stick with him for another year and have another crack and just take the long view and say, lost Suarez, lost Sturridge through most of the season with injury. You know, these things happen. One more swing at it. But it's going to be tight. Certainly, if they nosedive now, it will be very difficult for him to stay on.
A Burnley-Leicester, which could well be a championship fixture next season, but Leicester have won 3 out of 3, which is extraordinary, and Burnley keep on fighting.
Yeah, and they kept on fighting in this fixture at the Walker Stadium because Leicester were 2-1 up. Burnley equalised, I think, in the 6 minute of injury time with a free kick. Nigel Pearson was quite uncomplimentary about their style of play, and I kind of fancy Burnley for this one.
For what reason?
Because they're at home. I don't think there's much between the two sides, and I just think they'll be well up for it. They also have, well, I mean, that's nonsense because they're supposed to be well up for it, won't they? But they have Sam Vokes and Danny Ings for this fixture who weren't there for the one at the Walker Stadium. They were injured. Also, Burnley were missing, I think, most of their midfield for that game.
I mean, I do like the way Burnley have tried to play a settled side and play the same players when they can. But you sort of think that, I don't know, I think they're starting to look really quite tired now.
I'm not sure, but I think that in the last few weeks, I think Ings has stopped scoring, and that's been a big problem for them. I think the wins have dried up a little bit for them, and with Ings not scoring, you do worry. I think he'll be their striker will be a big player for them in this game. But this is the game where I think they really need him to come back. And I don't think he's necessarily been playing badly, but he's not been getting the goals he was. I don't know whether all the talk has led to him taking his eye off the ball. I doubt it. I don't think he's that kind of player. And who would let his focus drop, but yeah, he does need to put in a big performance in this match.
They're also missing Ashley Barnes after his silly sending off last week. He's suspended.
How'd you see it going?
Impossible to make a prediction. Leicester have never been as bad as the table made out, and they've shown that in the last three games. They are capable of getting results. Burnley, you always know what you're getting with them. There's always an intensity there, which can be enough to take advantage of teams who don't show up. But I think Leicester will show up. So basically, it's a knife fight in a pub car park.
Good. Well, look, that was part two. In part three, we'll carry on talking about the Premier League. And Barry's done some research on Scotland and will tell you how to wash your hands. It's an 11-point guide to washing your hands.
No,
I'm serious. Welcome to part three of Football Weekly Extra. Let's start with Palace v Hull then. Hull just really struggling at the moment, aren't they? And sort of, let me just look at the league table. Yeah, what, 4 defeats, 2 draws in their last 6 games. They're going that way, as are Sunderland.
But Ian thinks they're really good.
Hull?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm never going to live this down, am I?
When did you say this, Ian?
8 games.
About 6 months ago.
They were having a run where they were playing well and they weren't getting results. They kept drawing games or losing by the odd goal. And then I saw him play against West Ham. And I thought, they're all right, this lot. And I mentioned it on the podcast. And then I don't think they've won a game since. And we'll probably never win another game.
But I've certainly looked at the acquisitions Hull have made in the last season or so and thought, they look like good players. That looks like a sensible way of building
up to the
squad.
Next level, yeah. Isn't it? No,
they sold George Boyd on. He can't have been that much of an influence. I mean, I think he's a decent player and he works really, really hard. But, yeah, you can't blame their collapse on George Boyd, surely.
No, they've been awful across the park every time I've seen them ever since I said that. And that'll be on my gravestone.
I hope it isn't. I'd like to think there'd be something slightly nicer.
Graffiti, probably.
And Palace lost the last game as well. And you sort of think whether you like Pardew or you don't, he won't. He'll just get them up for it for the sake of it. And then I suppose David Myler is there, isn't he? So, Alan Pardew could seek him out.
Yeah, that's a way to get Hull fired up, maybe. Palace were quite poor against West Brom last week, but you speak to a few Palace fans, I think they saw it coming. They saw them losing to Tony Pulis, and I think Pardew tried to spice it up by doing things that maybe Pulis wouldn't have expected because he thought he knew the players so well. He put Joe Ledley at left back, and I think afterwards Pulis was asked about that. He said, yeah, but he always hated playing left back. He never wanted to do it. So it didn't quite work. I think they'll be back to the tried and tested formula Palace on Saturday, and you would expect them to win if they play the way they were playing before last weekend.
QPR play West Ham. There's been a lot made recently about West Ham's decision to give season tickets away and become the altruistic football club that we all dreamed a football club would be.
Great, isn't it? It's really good.
Well, on the face of it, it seems like a nice thing to do. Are there any cynics in this
room? There's a lot of cynics.
Barry, your hand is up.
Yes.
And what makes you so cynical, Barry?
No, I'm wholeheartedly in favour of fans getting cheap tickets, season tickets, but let's not pretend it's anything other than a concerted effort to fill the Olympic Stadium when they move there. And Karen Brady, their chief executive, has been on the most transparent charm offensive I've ever seen in the last couple of days. I've seen her, and it's been slightly disappointing to see the easy ride she's got in a lot of interviews. I mean, West Ham can well afford to offer cheaper season tickets because they're getting the Olympic Stadium. They have to pay, 15 million quid up front, which they don't have to pay till they've sold Upton Park or it's been redeveloped. They have to pay £2.5 million rent per year. And it's not really, fair on other clubs, I think. And
isn't that just jealousy of someone doing some good business?
Yeah, it is good business. But, I mean, there's, 138.5 million pounds worth of taxpayers' money going into West Ham.
What should they have done with the stadium?
Pardon?
What should they have done with the stadium?
They should have turned it into a giant...
But what should they have done with
the cogs are turning.
Yeah, can't think. I have no objection to West Ham getting the stadium. None whatsoever. But the row over whether or not all the millions being poured into it to the stadium to make it fit for football constitutes state aid, which would be a breach of EU legislation.
And who will complain about that?
Anyone. You can complain. Okay. Manchester United can complain. Ian can complain, I can complain, anyone can complain. They have several years in which to lodge their complaints.
And then what happens if I complain?
If you complain, you're...
Do I get the stadium?
No.
Oh.
But your complaint would be evaluated and West Ham could end up having to pay £128.5 million, which is the amount of taxpayers' money that has gone into the stadium.
Jacob, it sounds fair that they should pay that.
It's very fair. Yeah, it should all go to Sheffield United as well. That all that money.
But, I mean, hats off to them. They got a great deal. And I do think that there is a lot of jealousy there. But let's not pretend that, their reduction in ticket prices is a philanthropic gesture.
No, but it's a good thing.
They do need... Yeah, it is a good thing. But they do need to fill that stadium. So they have to launch this charm offensive.
And they definitely need to be in the Premier League the season after next.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. But I think that... I get why people are annoyed about the taxpayers' money being used for it, but also as well, you get sometimes where these debates are seen in black and white terms, and where people are so annoyed about the fact that taxpayer money being used for it, and then aren't able to say, well, actually, the ticket prices are a good thing as well. It's what people have been crying out for,
No, and, they aren't.
Well, no, you get a lot. I've read quite a lot of pieces where people have said we shouldn't praise them for it. Well, what do you want? People have been calling so long for reduced ticket prices, and maybe this will be something that will lead to more clubs reducing their ticket prices. You're going to have a club in the Premier League club in London, central London, more or less, or East London, but with great transport links, where people are going to be able to go and see. You would hope Premier League football for quite a small amount.
There is also a certain kickback to the taxpayers, and I have no idea what these numbers are, but if you dump 60,000 people in the same place once every fortnight, then they're going to spend money. And they're going to spend money in a part of London which about 5-6 years ago was an absolute pile of crap. It was a horrible place. And now, you know, for many
now
reasons,
it's
redeveloped. Nice and, yeah. But you're going to put that many people there over and over again, and it's going to go some way towards regenerating an area. And I'm like Barry, I've got a natural kind of worry about the idea of taking all of that taxpayers' money and giving it to a business who pay people £60,000 a week to play football or sometimes not to play football. But at the same time, I've not yet heard an idea that was better than doing at least something to regenerate a crap bit of London.
And also, while 168.5 million is a lot of taxpayers' money, you just have to read an issue of Private Eye to see that far bigger sums of taxpayers' money are wasted on government computer systems that don't work, consultancy fees that are, you know, disastrous, PR campaigns that are
nuclear
totally
missiles.
Exactly, yeah. Nuclear missiles. Those tanks you were driving around for part of our Talk Sports show because we are marketable assets.
Yeah.
So I would rather the money, my tax pounds go towards the cause of football fans getting cheaper tickets than any of those other things.
We should, though, I can't believe I'm saying this as a Southend fan, but we should spare a thought for Leighton Orient, who have had all this dumped onto their doorstep, and with cheap tickets as well. Whatever they were getting from disenchanted West Ham fans, or West Ham fans who've been priced out of the market, that market niche is pretty much over for them now. So you can understand why they're very angry.
Yeah, sure. To the game very quickly. They go to Loftus Road. What do we think?
West Ham were pretty appalling against Manchester City last week, and probably heaping more pressure on poor old Sam Allardyce. And QPR have been playing pretty well in the last few weeks, so they would certainly view this as a winnable game. I know they lost against Chelsea, but there were certainly moments in that game where they could have taken the lead, where Matt Phillips had a great chance and Courtois made an amazing save. But before that, they scored three at Villa Park, not to win, but drew 3-3 and four at West Brom. So they are suddenly capable of scoring goals. Charlie Austin in form and Bobby Zamora in form, they could do this.
They've also lost, though, I think, 6 in a row at home. They couldn't win away, and now they can't win away.
Yeah, but if there's a game that they needed to get back on track, then here it is.
Chris Ramsey's. Yeah. And if you're on the slide and things aren't going your well and your new manager hasn't made the impact you'd hope, Barry, away at Stoke, is that the game you want as a Sunderland fan? Or is there any game that would be good for Sunderland now, apart from Newcastle?
Well, they need... Dick Advocaat has shown huge ambition by asking his players, setting a target of 6 points from 6 games. I just think, oh, Christ. Is that the level of your ambition? 6 points from 6 games. And I saw yesterday as well, Sunderland's Billy Jones, right? He was telling an interviewer that... Dick Advocaat has mentioned the need for Sunderland's players to defend from the front, win first and second balls, and generally work a bit harder. You know, so he said, we're going to do that. And I just thought, it beggars belief that senior professional footballers need to be told to work hard and defend from the front and win more first and second balls. But apparently Sunderland's players were unaware of this. it might help.
They didn't win that. Well, we did our very best, didn't we?
Another one later.
So
what do you think's going to happen?
I think Sunderland will lose.
Do you think they'll go down?
I think it's a coin toss.
But they could be in the bottom three by, well, Saturday evening.
There's six teams in the bottom seven that I would say are all about equal in ability, and three of them will go down. Sunderland, Newcastle and Hull are obviously better placed than Leicester, QPR, Burnley. I think Villa will be all right.
And actually, in the strife that Newcastle are in, home to Swansea is not a disastrous match to have, is it?
No, but they are, again, playing very, very poorly. And you do worry about John Carver, whether he is cut out for this job.
Yeah, there was an error. Carver just did come out after the Spurs game and went, well, you know, we're just not as good, are we?
The players aren't terrible, though. I think they've got decent players. And as you saw with Pardew, a manager can put it together and put together some results.
And there's
another protest.
Yes, they're all going to stand up.
For the whole game?
No, for a minute.
Okay.
Why? I mean, I don't have a thing against the protest, but what's this protest?
It's just to keep momentum going of this publicity drive to
what
get
minute,
Ashley
What minutes
out.
Have they picked? Jonas's squad number?
I think
or?
It's 34, which is the amount of money Newcastle have in a slush fund that it was revealed last week or the week before.
That's 34 million.
34, yeah, not 34 quid.
Finally, then City Villa. Villa, you know, Tim Sherwood, the Pep of the English. Where are we putting Tim Sherwood now?
I like Tim Sherwood.
Good God, at least a man's trousers stay on.
I think they could win this. Unlike another side in Claret and Blue, they haven't given up for the season, and I think they'll give City a much tougher game than West Ham did last week. And I don't think City necessarily played so well last week that you make you think that they're right back in form. And Villa have this knack of being able sometimes to go to a big side and give them a bit of a scare with the way they can counter-attack. And yeah, I think Benteke will, again, like he did against Liverpool's defence, fancy it.
Two questions about Manchester City. Any danger of them slipping out of the top four? What are they? 7 points ahead of Liverpool. Liverpool do have a game in hand. And Pellegrini, will he be there next year?
On the evidence of what I saw last week, I think they're safe in the top four. And I don't think Pellegrini will be there next year.
Word is they're already sounding out people, having initial conversations. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's over.
And a club's always sounding out people. I mean, presumably you would, wouldn't you? Presumably
there's no point in sacking somebody if you don't have someone else sort of in line to take over, really. I don't see the point of it.
And of course, a lot of managers are represented by agents who also represent players, and so there's no harm in having a conversation with an agent here and there.
And you can pretend it's about someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And who are they sounding out? Klopp? Anyone else?
Well, Tikshi Begiristan went to the Bayern Munich game on Tuesday, but I think if he was asking Pep if he'd like to come this summer, he might have been disappointed. A lot of talk about Rafa Benitez as well, who will probably be leaving Napoli, and someone who knows the Premier League, I think he'd love to come back.
Barry, you want to talk about Scotland?
Yeah, Barry's Scottish Football Corner.
Welcome to it. Barry's Scottish Football Corner.
Well, there's three bit things. The first thing, do you remember I was saying on Monday that Celtic were hard done by because in the Scottish Cup semi-final because they were denied a penalty for what looked a blatant handball.
Oh, absolutely. And the fifth official was
Inverness's Josh Meekings.
Away. Yes.
Well, Josh Meekings has now been suspended retrospectively.
Oh, really?
And will miss the final, which seems a bizarre decision. He's been getting picked up a one-match ban retrospectively for a handball.
I don't know how I feel about that.
But there's handballs in every game that go on seeing.
Yes, but not deliberate on the line, I guess.
Well, he's arguing that it wasn't necessarily deliberate because the ball was hit straight at him from very close range. I'm not sure I buy it, but it is a legitimate defence.
Does it matter? If you stop it with your hand on the line and your hand is away from your body, even if it was totally... You had a spasm and it's unintentional.
Well, if I think
that's still a penalty.
If it's hit straight at your hand, you know... I don't know.
When I'm on the pitch, I always say, how could that be deliberate? But I actually still don't know the rules. I don't believe anyone knows it.
The natural position thing, which can be best explained by maybe you didn't deliberately intend to handle the ball and you couldn't because it was so close. But if you're doing jazz hands from close range, that's not really a natural position.
I mean, naturally, if you're a Scooby-Doo monster, then you're out here.
Do you really like jazz hands? That might just be the natural position for you.
Jazz hands are my natural.
Anyway, we're digressing from Barry's Fit Bar Scottish Corner, or whatever it's called, so carry on.
I presume you're all familiar with the 1592 Lord Lyon King of Arms Act.
This is Adrianians, isn't it?
Yes. Well, the badges of as many as half of Scotland's 42 senior clubs may have to be changed due to this arcane law. Adrianians will have to have a new badge from September. They're legally obliged to.
So some lord is saying, I don't want you to use this anymore. What?
Well, basically, yeah, it's to do with having certain colours, certain bits of tartan or a saltire in an enclosed crest kind of thing. St Mirren and Kilmarnock had to alter their badges in the 1990s, and St Johnson, Dundee, Ayr, East Fife and Hamilton Academicals have also been found to be in breach of this weird ancient law, which relates to heraldic devices.
But who's prosecuting? I mean, who's got time on their hands to do that when they could be doing something useful for the world?
It's bureaucracy, isn't it?
Do you have the populations of Inverness and Falkirk?
I do.
Good.
Falkirk has a population of 35,168 people, and Inverness has a population of 62,473.
So they could
people.
More than fill a Hampden.
If every single person goes, there will be people who will miss out
on the Scottish Cup final. Ian, you wanted to mention, is that the end of Scottish Football Corner?
Yes.
Ian, FC United.
Yes. What a day for them. I know this is like wading into someone else's civil war because feelings run very, very high on the formation of this club. But there are two types of people in the world, aren't there? The people who moan and moan and moan and moan and moan, and people who moan and then go off and do something about it. And so disenchanted Manchester United fans went off and formed their own club. And they have now crossed the threshold. They have achieved.
They could have just stood up for a minute.
My point is made. They have crossed the threshold to which we all aspire, and next season you'll be able to be FC United on Football Manager, which is obviously what we're looking for.
What, so they're in the Conference North?
Conference North.
And they're going to be replaced in the... what were they in?
Evo Stick
Premier.
Salford.
By Salford, yeah. Which is the team owned by their co-owners.
And while we're at it, congratulations too to Maidstone, who I went to see in the first round of the FA Cup. They're a lovely football club and they're in the Conference South, so you can be them on Football Manager too.
I was put in Football Manager last year because they sponsor Watford and I went to train with Watford and Zola. It was a great day, and you know, I did something reasonably football in front of Gianfranco Zola. And there was the guy from Football Manager, Miles, who runs it, and he gave me Natural Fitness 1, which was very sad. Jacob, do you have anything to add?
No.
Last week, we were talking about washing your hands because we were talking about attention to detail. And Dave Brailsford, apparently at Team Sky, teaches people how to wash their hands. And for anybody who was interested, I have the 11-point guide, which I believe was on a website that had a video as well from Great Ormond Street. At any point during the 11-point guide, producer Ben, you can just fade us down. Barry, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Ian, thanks for your time.
Thank you
for having me. Thanks for your time. Before you start, roll up your sleeves, remove any rings containing stones, and remove your wristwatch. 1. Wet your hands under running warm water before you add the soap. Liquid soap is usually easier to use than solid soap.
Jacob's left the room.
And just as effective. 2. Put a small amount of soap in the palm of one hand. 3. Rub your hands together, palm to palm, to spread the soap over your skin. 4. Rub one palm over the back of your other hand, then do the same for the other hand. 5. Either with your hands palm to palm or with one hand on top of the other, rub your hands together with your fingers, interlaced, to clean the space between your fingers. 6. Clean the tips of your fingers by rubbing them in the cupped palm of your other hand.
What?
7. Hold your thumb with your other hand and rub the entire surface thoroughly. Repeat with your other thumb. 8. Grasp one wrist with your other hand and rub the entire surface thoroughly. Repeat with your other wrist. 9. Rub your hands palm to palm again. 10. Rinse your hand thoroughly under running water to remove any traces of soap or bubbles. 11, dry your hands thoroughly using paper towels. Or at home, use a clean towel.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the simplest, most powerful website creator that helps you make headlines with your own stunning online presence. Explore elegant templates, Getty image integration, and more at squarespace.com, and use the code Guardian to get 10% off.